What a place to talk about crisis theory. The last time I was at the Lula Lounge, when it wasn't the Socialist Register, there was a magician on stage. And he called me up, dragged me up, and he made me dress up like a rabbit and made an absolute fool of me, so I'm kind of intimidated about being up there. I just want to say something about the politics of crises, about the left predicting crises. And it's not just that crises are bad for people, that, you know, we shouldn't cheer on the next crisis. It's also that the assumption that crises are good for politics is wrong. Usually when there's a crisis, what most people want, what most working people want, is to get back to the good old days that were themselves pretty rotten, and they romanticize them. And second of all, it's not just that crises lead to concessions. And I think as Brian Gregg will talk about, when you've got crises like this crisis, it's also a time when you structurally weaken the working class further. So the working class is going to come out of this crisis even weaker. And the second thing about always talking about capitalism going into a deeper crisis or American empire being in decline is that it leads us underestimating what we're really up against and therefore how much we have to organize to fight. And it also, I think, doesn't pose the question correctly. The real challenge for us isn't to convince people that capitalism is lousy when it's not working. The answer to that is make it work better. The real problem for us is how do you convince people that capitalism is lousy? It's a barrier to human development, even when it's working well, sometimes especially when it's working well. So I'm going to say a few things about crises. And when I'm talking about crises, I'm not talking about the fact that capitalism always has its ups and downs and develops unevenly. I want to address the question of why is it that at certain moments in history, we have these profound structural breakdowns. It seems to happen every 30, 35 years. One at the end of the 19th century, the Great Depression, the 70s, that one today. And they last for a long time. Often lasted 10 years, some cases 20 years. And to get out of them, it's involved massive changes in social relations, in the balance of class forces. And it's also meant inventing, if not transforming or inventing, new kinds of institutions. So these are profound events. And I want to make three points about them. The first point is that we have to think about this historically rather than trying to find the laws, the general law of crises. We're talking about the making of capitalism. And capitalism is made historically and at any moment in time. It's at a particular stage in the development of the working class and the development of corporate forms in terms of what globalization means in that period, what financialization means, what capacities the state has. So when we're looking at a particular crisis like the crisis of the 19th century or the Great Depression, we're looking at capitalism at a particular stage in the making of capitalism. And we have to really be sensitive to the historical nature of that issue. The second thing I want to emphasize is that there's a contingency to crises. The question of how long they will last, how deep they'll be, is contingent. And it's contingent for a very systematic reason. It's contingent because coming out of that depends on what kind of resistance there is, what kind of space the working class allows. It often depends on whether capital can invent new forms, new technologies, and whether the state can not only manage the crisis, but invent new forms of management, new ways of containing them, and new ways of moving on. So it's contingent. When you're in the middle of one of these crises, in the 30s or whenever it is, it's not clear that this is going to end. It's an open question. Nobody knows that. The uncertainty is part of what that crisis is about. The third thing about crises is that when they're resolved, they change a lot of things. And what that means is that the next crisis is going to be distinct and different. This is part of why they are historical and the limits of just assuming the same rules and laws explain crises over time. So if you're looking at the crisis of the 70s, for example, it's not helpful in terms of saying this is how that crisis happened and now we're just going to apply that to this crisis. What we have to be conscious of is what has changed. The crisis of the 70s ended. It hasn't just been displaced, it hasn't been just postponed. It's actually ended. And it ended and it changed a lot of things. Its end brought a new kind of financialization, a new kind of globalization. It dramatically weakened the working class. It reorganized how corporations operate in terms of value change. It dramatically changed things. And if we're going to analyze crises today, that's where we have to start from. So let me just say a couple of things about the crisis today, and then I'll wrap up. One of the crucial things about understanding the crisis today is that it's not useful to think of it in terms of overaccumulation, underaccumulation, the lack of profitability. Those aren't empirically valid, and they're not theoretically valid. One of the things we really have to understand if we look at this crisis is how finance has changed. We don't just have more finance, we have a different kind of finance today. And the reason that I emphasize that is because it's not useful to think of finance simply in terms of its speculation or it's diverting resources from industry and hurting industry. The problem for capital is that it needs finance, that finance is actually functional to capitalism. On the other hand, finance is very volatile. So they've got to deal with both things. They can't just say, let's stop the volatility of finance and regulate it and control it, because they need the dynamism that finance has actually exhibited. Painful to an awful lot of people, painful to sections of business, but it's been absolutely fundamental to continuing the making of global capitalism. So the thing about finance is to appreciate that it's fundamental to capitalism, it's fundamental to its functioning, but it is very volatile, and that means we're going to have constant crises and turmoil. The second thing I want to emphasize about the present crisis is that if you look at past crises, these four major crises that we've had, in all of them, the working class, in one way or another, its strength was very relevant. So in the crisis of the 1870s, the working class wasn't organized, but it had market strength. Skilled workers were very mobile, a lot of ways more mobile than a lot of businesses. Workers could still go back to the land, to the farm, to farming. So workers had certain options that gave them a certain amount of strength, whereas capitalism at that point in time was very competitive, and that led to a profit squeeze. In the Great Depression, you have the great sit-down strikes. That becomes an important element in terms of the question of how this is going to be resolved. In the 70s, of course, you had a lot of militancy, and people refusing to lower their expectations, and this again, it led to pressures on capital. This crisis wasn't caused by the strength of workers. In fact, part of workers' weakness was an element in this crisis. So now when we start thinking about the politics of this, we have to deal with the question of finance, and one of the things we have to put on the agenda, as Leo's really been emphasizing every chance he's gotten, is the question of making the financial system into a democratic public utility that addresses our collective needs. And the second thing we have to deal with that makes this crisis so difficult is that weakness of the working class. And so it isn't just a matter of coming up with great ideas, it's a question of how do we build this capacity? How do we renew it? But not just renew it, because the capacities that the working class had before have proven to be very limited. And we have to take that seriously, because I think what it puts on the agenda is not the irrelevancy of unions, but whether we need new forms of working class organization to come out of this crisis. And if we can't get that, whether we can really make advances. So to conclude, I think that what this crisis is really saying to us is that the moderate is now impossible. This is the message from every state, from in Europe, everywhere. The moderate is impossible. And what that means is that the only thing that's practical anymore is the radical. And that's what we have to start talking about. And that's what the next issue of the Register is going to be about. And I think it's going to be a very exciting issue. Thank you.